Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Slash Film Daily. Today is Thursday, May 8th, 2025. On today's episode of the show, we're going to be talking about a new movie called Watch the Skies, and we'll present an interview with some of the movie's filmmakers. My name is Ben Pearson. I am an editor at slashfilm.com, and I'm joined on today's episode by Slash Film editor Jacob Hall.
Hello, hello.
All right, so Jacob, you actually had a chance to see this movie way back in 2023 when it was operating under a different title. Is that right?
Yeah, that's the reason why we're talking about this film. It's we're not just dedicating an episode of the podcast to a random, you know, small science fiction film that's getting a limited release this weekend just because it's there. We're doing this because I saw this film when it was called UFO Sweden in 2022 when it played at Fantastic Fest. And I wrote a very positive review for the site. I was very excited by it, and I was looking forward to seeing it again, and then nothing came of it. It was released, you know, in Sweden, where it was made, and it made the rounds in Europe, from what I can tell, but never was released in the United States. But here it is. And Ben, do you want to explain the circumstances of its release and why it's unique, or should I?
Okay, so yeah, as far as I understand it, Jacob, and you know a little bit better than I do because you had a chance to talk to some of the people responsible for this, but the way I understand it is that basically an AI company got involved with the filmmakers of this movie, and they were able to essentially use this program, this technology that they invented, to reshape the actors' mouths and have them do voiceover work and basically like present an English version of the movie that doesn't look like it's been dubbed like an old spaghetti Western or something. Right. So is that kind of the basic gist of it?
Yeah, it's really interesting. And I'll admit, when I first heard about this, I was really, really skeptical. AI is a term that I think rightfully people get upset about. And this technology company called the Flawless is what is the name of the company. And their whole thing is that they want to use AI technology to give filmmakers a stronger hand in dubbing films. And the way it works is they bring in the original actors. No one in this dub of the film for the American release is brand new. They brought in all the original Swedish actors. WGA has signed off on it. This is not like some rogue thing where actors are being replaced or voices are being created by computers. And they re-recorded all the dialogue in English. And normally, when you dub films for international release, you have to sort of write for the mouth movement. You have to try to write dialogue and contort it to fit, you know, the mouth in some way. And it never looks right. It looks bad. It leads to bad dialogue and worse performances, and it always feels unnatural. And the idea behind this technology is that once the actors have re-recorded their dialogue in English, essentially this computer program remaps it to their mouths. It allows the dub to better fit in the mouths of the actors. It digitally alters it so that it all matches, and it allows filmmakers and actors to have control over international version of their film. And as somebody who has, you know, never had a problem with subtitles, I will always prefer subtitles over dubs. I still found this really interesting because this technology means that a Swedish film like this one, which is a very accessible, very mainstream, very crowd-pleasing movie, that, you know, people wouldn't give the time of day because it was in Swedish, now has essentially this, you know, technologically enhanced invisible dub, so that it's still set in Sweden, here it's the Swedish accents, but they're all speaking in English. And it's, you know, if you don't know what to look for, it's really hard to tell that's happening. If you know the technology and know what's being done, you can occasionally see shots here and there. Maybe it's a smidge off. But the idea is that if you didn't know this wasn't shot in English, you wouldn't be able to tell. And the fact that the filmmakers themselves told me this allowed them to rewrite the dialogue to better fit the English language, allowed them to make changes and tweaks to better fit the dub, it allowed them essentially really have total control over, you know, a version of the film that more Americans would see than if they just released it with subtitles. So it's a, like I said, I'm still skeptical to AI in general and how it can be abused in future filmmaking. But this is very much a definition of what it should be, which is a tool to let filmmakers have more control and to, you know, be part of their craft. So if you are watching Watch the Skies, formerly UFO Sweden, you know, in its limited release in some theaters this weekend, but also I believe it'll be hitting all the other, you know, usual platforms in the very near future. You're watching a version that the filmmakers straight up personally oversaw, personally approved, and were able to tweak and adjust, you know, and I think that's cool. Like, I was really won over by how this tech was utilized in here, and I'm the kind of guy who vomits at the sound of AI.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. As soon as I heard about that, I almost like wrote this movie off entirely. And then I think I saw you in our Slack channel say like, oh, I didn't realize they renamed this. This is a movie that I really liked. And I was like, all right, wait a second. Maybe I should give this a little bit of a shot. And they actually released a featurette on YouTube about how some of this technology works. So if you want to like actually see it in action, you can go to the YouTube page. Maybe I'll try to find that video and link to it in the show notes. But I think they'll probably talk about some of the same stuff that Jacob ends up talking to them about in the interview that you folks are about to hear. So I guess, Jacob, like the question is, in this particular instance, it worked out because these actors happened to speak English and the filmmakers were totally on board with this. As you mentioned, the guild signed off on it. I think SAG was like, yeah, this is totally A-okay because the same folks were involved in making it. And this is like a filmmaker overseen project. But this technology kind of, to me, it kind of means that like maybe one day down the line, we're not going to get quite as a clean cut a version of this type of thing being implemented in other movies, right? Like it seems like there's going to be maybe different people doing voiceovers or who, because the original actors might not speak the language of the country that they're talking about. I'm sure there are other uses of this. So what do you think about the potential that this technology has, both positive and negative, for future projects?
That's what I'm interested in seeing what happens next, because for example, let's say they want to release a South Korean film in the States with flawless this technology being used up. But let's say those actors don't necessarily speak English, because I know it's very common for people across Europe to be bilingual. It's not always common in other nations. And let's say there's no opportunity for original actors to return. I think that it's very possible they could hire, you know, third-party actors to come in and do a dub and have it mapped to the actors' mouths. I think for me, the main concern is that this technology isn't replacing actors. I think there's a horrible fear that they could use AI to essentially create a voice from scratch and put that in an actor's mouth. And that to me is abhorrent. But to me, like there've been a lot of great dubs. Like for example, like Boy and the Heron a few years ago, the Miyazaki film had a wonderful English dub. That's the one I watched first and loved. So I'm definitely not opposed to other actors stepping in for a dubbing. I just don't want AI creating the voice from scratch. And I think that whether you're bringing the original actors or you're bringing in a third party to, if that's what situation calls for, this technology is really neat. And I say this as somebody who, I still think if you ask me, hey, do you want to watch it in the original subtitle version or do you want to watch this, you know, digitally enhanced dub? I'm the kind of guy who would probably still go for subtitles. I've been reading them my entire life. I have no problems with it. I think that I still want to see the original performances so I can, you know, see how the film originally was. But as long as actors are involved, as long as the filmmakers are involved, and as long as it's all being signed off on by creatives, and it's not just something where, oh, a computer is going to do it all by itself, then this is a technology that I am cautiously and optimistically on board with.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. So I guess, why don't you set up sort of what this movie is for people who may not have heard about it? We talked about the thing that kind of makes it newsworthy, but what actually is this movie about?
Yeah, so Watch the Skies, it's a period piece. It's set in the 1990s, and it's about a teenage girl whose father was a member of this UFO club. Him and his buddies would go out and like search for UFOs or evidence of aliens, and it became all-consuming, and it pretty much destroyed their lives. And one day, while looking for a UFO using coordinates he's stolen from a Swedish weather installation, he vanishes. Him and his car both go like into the night. Nobody knows where he went. And years later, she's living with a foster family, and the car, let's just say it reemerges years later. And it gets her on a quest to try to track down what happened to her dad, which means going to find all of his old UFO hunting buddies and join their club and trying to figure out what happened to him. And for a film that's set in the 90s, it this amazing little magic trick. You know how most when a Hollywood filmmaker often says, "Oh, this is my tribute to Amblin," or "This is my '80s movie," it's full of constant winks and nudges, being like, "Hey, remember? Look, it's the '80s," or "Hey, look, it's the early '90s." Mm-hmm. The Stranger Things thing of, you know, "Hey, wink, wink, we love the '80s too." What Watch This Guys does that's really interesting is that it never feels like it's winking and nudging about its '90s setting. It feels like it was made in the '90s. It feels like it's the kind of movie you would have found on a Blockbuster Video on VHS in 1995 and watched and watched and rewatched over again. It legitimately feels like an artifact that fell out of that time without ever feeling like it's a direct homage. It doesn't feel like a pastiche. It's just a movie, and it just feels like one of those '90s, you know, mid-budget, family-friendly sci-fi movies that you would have found back then. I'm just so impressed that, like, the Swede just kind of outdid the Americans at this. Like, every American filmmaker is like, "I want to pay tribute to the films of my childhood," and Sweden did it, and their tribute feels seamless. Like, at no point do you watch this and go like, "Oh yeah, this is a nostalgia play." You watch it and feel like, "Oh yeah, this is just a film set in the '90s," and it all feels right. And like I said, this is a movie you can watch with your family, which is why I think the dub may be really good, because you can watch this with, you know, 10, 11 year olds and have a great time with it. It's not violent. There's no swearing. There's action, but it's not bloody. It's thrilling, but it's not scary. It just captures all the things we like about that era of filmmaking, like that, you know, the back in the day when studios used to make, you know, mid-budget, you know, character-driven genre movies like this, and does it without feeling the need to get huge or get bombastic, or, you know, like I said, throw tons of references and winks in there. It doesn't have any Easter eggs like other '90s movies. It just wants to be its own thing, while echoing the kind of style of filmmaking that is no longer with us, unfortunately. And the third act in this movie is really cool, and I won't spoil it here, but it made me really emotional, and it really makes you realize at one point that the filmmakers have designed this film's final message as a retort to a sci-fi classic. There's a famous science fiction movie that, if you listen to the show, you have seen it, you're aware of it, you're not aware that Watch the Skies, or UFO Sweden, as I formerly knew it, is deliberately designed as a retort to that film's final message. And I was not prepared for that, and it kind of emotionally blew me over. So if you love like those kind of low-key late 80s, early 90s studio science fiction films that just don't exist anymore, the ones that, you know, were rated PG and you watched over and over again, renting them from Blockbuster like I did, it works perfectly well as reminding me of the kind of things I used to love watching without ever feeling like it's a pure nostalgia play. Like, you can just watch this on its own and appreciate it on its own. Also, it's just really good performances. Like that, I think that some of the actors, like, one of the double-edged swords here is that some actors are clearly more comfortable speaking English than others. So I'm so glad the original cast is back. I'm so glad they have total control of the performances. But we'll say that some actors kill it in English. Some of them clearly aren't as used to acting in English as others, which leads that some performances are a bit shakier than they were in Swedish, at least from what I can tell from, you know, reading subtitles a couple years ago. But it's never distracting to the point where it hurts the movie. But like, if you're a fan of film technology, you've got to see this just so you can see this tech at work and have an opinion on it. But also, if you're just a fan of like really good science fiction movies, especially ones that, you know, are just charming and low key and, you know, do the fundamentals really, really well, Watch the Skies is just a really good time. And if it's playing in you in theaters, you know, it is an audience movie. I suggest if it's at all possible, try to find it. But this will play just as well at home, too. This is a movie that I think people are going to really find and really treasure.
Awesome. Okay, so I was just reminded that I think Chris Evangelista pointed this out in our Slack, that technically technology like this has kind of been used before. There was that movie Fall from a few years ago where the two girls get trapped up on the top of that tower that they climbed to the top of. And they did something, I believe, to change the rating of the movie, where they digitally manipulated their voices so they like weren't saying swear words or something like that. I don't remember the exact details, but I think it was something like that. And I don't think Flawless was the company involved in that. So maybe they have like, they've locked down their own version of this technology and put their own spin on it. But so yeah, the one question I wanted to ask you, Jacob, before we go to your interviews is, I have not really seen a lot of modern Swedish films. So how does a movie like this stack up in terms of like visual effects and stuff like that? I feel like some countries you can tell just don't really have access to the visual effects houses that blockbuster US productions do. And so sometimes the effects are like a little janky, but maybe charmingly so, depending on the tone of the movie that you're watching. But I was just wondering if you could tell basically that this one didn't quite have the same resources as those types of movies from the 90s that you were alluding to earlier, or if it was pretty seamless on the visual effects side of things too.
For a science fiction film, the visual effects are limited. There's not a lot of giant visual effects, and what are there are very effective. I say the third act has some really stunning stuff in it, but Crazy Pictures, the filmmaking collective behind this film, this is their second film, and they're like kind of young, hungry, ambitious filmmaking teams that tend to like have emerged, I think, in the post YouTube era, where they're really capable of doing a lot with a little. And they do a really wise job here of knowing when to deploy visual effects and when not to. And like I said, the film feels very grounded, very much set in our world for the bulk of the running time. So when the visual effects do come up, you know, whatever budget they had for them really is pulled off. There was never a point in this movie where I felt like it was cheap. I just felt like things looked perfectly fine and they arrived when they needed to arrive.
Awesome. Okay, so anything else you wanted to say just in terms of wrap up about this movie before we take a break and go to your interviews?
Like I said, I gave this movie an 8.5 in my original review, you know, 2 or 3 years ago. And I think it probably still is an 8.5 if you want to like go by the numbers, but I've thought about it a lot. Like the third act in particular has really resonated with me, and I have been, I was actively, funny enough, before they announced the proper release of it in the United States with this, you know, digitally enhanced dub, I was thinking about like literally a week before that, thinking, man, when is UFO Sweden coming to the United States? And then like a week later, Watch the Skies is announced. And so, like I said, even though this is maybe not the kind of movie that knocks you on your butt when you first watch it, it is one that like, it's lingered with me. It's lingered with me for 3 years, long enough for me to say that this movie has kind of stood the test of time for me, and I've enjoyed it in both versions. And I hope you do too.
Excellent. All right, well, let's take a break and then we'll be right back.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Okay, so Jacob, you had a chance to sit down with the director of this movie, whose name is Victor Donnell, and then he is one of the people behind Crazy Pictures, the company that you mentioned earlier. There's also Albin Peterson, who's a producer of this movie. I think he works with the Crazy Pictures folks as well. And then Scott Mann, who's the co-founder of Flawless, which is a tech company that worked on the AI dubs. So anything you want to say in terms of setup, or should we just jump right in?
I will say this interview ended up, both of the Swedes, Victor Donnell and Albin Peterson, trying to communicate in English over a Zoom call, probably not their comfort zone. So a lot of this interview is Scott Mann, the co-founder of Flawless, sort of taking the lead. Very often I'll ask something and you can see them motion to him on the video. I don't know if it was shyness or discomfort with the language, but it was very hard to get like a full-blown like back and forth with the filmmakers. So this conversation ends up being more about the technology and the dub than about the film itself. So I hope that's of interest to you. And, you know, you'll get to hear Scott Mann, who is the one non-Swede kind of driving things. So I personally found this to be a illuminating conversation. But also, like I said, I did my best to get the Swedes to talk. But I think that they just, like I said, whether it's the English language thing or a Zoom thing or a not used to American junket style interview thing, this is more Scott Mann backed up by the Swedish filmmakers.
Gotcha. Okay, here is Jacob's conversation with Victor Donnell, Albin Peterson, and Scott Mann.
All right, so first of all, just real quick, everybody say their name so I can have the audio transcription, make sure we get everybody's stuff right.
Yeah. My name is Victor Donnell, director.
And Albin Peterson. And both Victor and I are from film collective Crazy Pictures.
And I'm Scott Mann. I'm a founder, co-CEO of Flawless.
All right. So I first saw this under its original title, UFO Sweden, at Fantastic Fest a few years ago. And I loved it. I walked out like buzzing about it. But one of my colleagues, very cynical, said that this was destined to get a lousy American remake before it got a proper release in the United States. So before we even get into the current version of the movie that we can all now see, was this something that threatened to happen? Was there ever a alternate timeline where the rights got sold and this got remade before you got dubbed?
I guess it could have. That was not the situation, but I guess if because you guys found the film pretty early,
yeah.
When we released it, so it was in Cannes 2023,
yeah,
that you found it. So we haven't got any offers for the remakes yet. So so this is such a better way to do it.
I looked at it like the filmmaking. Because the filmmaking, I'm sure like you, when I saw the film and fell in love with it, because the filmmaking's so great, it's the kind of, it's the universal language of cinema, right? And it's incredible filmmaking. And so I think that, yes, you could have, there is a world in which you could have gone and remade that. But you'd kind of be wanting to remake it shot for shot. Like, it's not necessarily a creative process, I would imagine. So I think that it did kind of fit very nicely with the idea that, look, we can keep all the greatness of the film, but open it out to the wider audience with new technology.
So the film is this very accessible crowd pleaser. I mean, like, you watch it and it's just a good time. There's no hurdles to enjoying it. So I guess my question is, are subtitles the only thing holding back movies like this from being enjoyed by certain audiences? In your experience, like, do people just straight up say, no, I'm not going to watch it because it has subtitles?
Yeah, I think I could speak probably from the English, you know, the English audience receiving kind of foreign language films, maybe, if that's all right. And I guess it'll be different in Sweden. But yeah, I think the general notion out there is that, yeah, people, it is a barrier. Like, subtitles are a barrier for people to enjoy movies. I think there's lots of reasons behind that as well. I think when you make a film, you know, as we know, right? Like, you're orchestrating the viewer to kind of be pulled into the screen. Very often, the face of the actors or the action that's playing out, and you're kind of orchestrating the film grammar, so you're pulled into the screen. And when you're reading subtitles, you're kind of pulled down somewhere else, and you're reading, not watching, or not experiencing, and all these things. And I think it's a hell of a lot less enjoyable. You lose comic timing, for example. You can't do comic, you know, delivery timing with things like subs. And so I think it is very damaging to the film. And it looks like, if you look at the figures of it, the vast majority of the audience for most films is in the home language territory. And I think the audiences are about 2% normally of what they are versus the home language elsewhere on Earth. So people just are not watching it and not doing it. And I think, you know, and it's a horrible shame, because there's great cinema out there that is not accessible, that is not opened out. And this is the first of hopefully many that will have that kind of access and that availability to every language of audience.
Yeah, and I think that's when we kind of screen the movie for people who have only seen the subtitle version and then see the VUB version, that you kind of, as you said, the comic relief, you kind of get the comedy a lot better, and you get a more feeling and understanding for the characters, so you kind of feel more. And
do you remember my first comment when I first saw the film, which I absolutely like, I fell in love with the film straight away, and thought, but I remember we talked about, like, thoughts on the film, and I was curious whether some of the audience weren't connecting as much as maybe it felt like they should have done, right? Like Denise and Leonard and that relationship storyline, and we had a conversation, didn't we, about, like, is this a cultural thing or is it something else? And it turned out, once the film was vubbed and you'd gotten rid of the subtitle barrier and the audience were watching and absorbing the performance of the actors, we all kind of cried watching the film this that time, because it hit us with the same emotional impact I think it hit the original language audience. So it does kind of pull in this different, it has these kind of other effects of really how you want the film to be watched and experienced in the home language. It makes it a hell of a lot more powerful, I would say, is how what we experienced.
So Victor and Albin, I'm curious about your initial reaction to the pitch about this type of technology. I feel like you're probably skeptical. I mean, it's kind of thing that knee-jerk reaction is, oh boy, that sounds like a bad idea, until you actually see it happen.
Yeah, we were skeptical. And both, that's kind of an American company coming with this idea of a new technology, and we kind of yeah, okay, will this work? And if it cannot work, how will it look? Will it look good enough? And this is done by AI. How is it done by AI? So there was a lot of questions, and we took a meeting with you guys, and we kind of started to understand what the goal, your vision is with Flawless and with the Vubbing. And we felt like more and more comfortable in joining this project, in that kind of, what we will do is only kind of doing a dubbing 2.0. It's kind of a new type of a dubbing, and it will kind of only be better for the viewer, for the audience. And we didn't, where we kind of use the AI thing in a good way, because we take in the actors, they doing their voices again, and we as directors can come in and also be a part of the dubbing process. We've never been part of a dubbing process before. We kind of find the film on kind of eBay in Germany to be able to see it. So this was the first time we could kind of join it and be a part of it. So it's actually been from kind of very skeptical to really like the way it's been. And this version is actually, yeah, we kind of really love the English version. Now, do you have anything to...
No, yeah, what you said, but yeah, our first and only request when you had the first meeting was to, can we bring back the original cast? That was a deal breaker for us, that if we are going to do this, we want to bring the original cast. And we were so glad that you have the same request.
Yeah, yeah.
That was your first question. Yeah, yeah. Can we bring in the original cast? And by doing that, I mean, it's still them. It's still the cast as in the Swedish version, doing the characters as in the original version. So yeah, we had a blast, and I think the English version, I mean, it's I think it's better. I mean, we had a second take on making the movie, and even if it's the same, it's something. I mean, I think it's better than the original version.
That's great.
Yeah.
What's the nuts and bolts process look like in creating the dub? I mean, it sounds like you have a lot more creative control here. You can keep it your movie. You have the same actors. So you sort of can really go in there and, as you say, make it better. So what makes this different from just being in an ADR booth? What is the actual process of how you interact with the technology and the actors, and how does it all come together?
The biggest difference from doing an ordinary ADR session is that you don't have to match the words exactly to the mouth. I mean, if you're replacing the dialogue, you have to match the movement of the mouth exactly. This technology enables us to be a little bit more free. We can change subtle things in the dialogue, in the translation, that makes things a little bit clearer or more direct or funnier or yeah, small stuff. And that freedom, I mean, it's liberating and it's gold, yeah.
And I think that's one of the constraints that the old dubbing pipeline had. There is you were trying to, as you say, you were trying to fit mouth movements and words to the wrong mouth movements.
Yeah.
And what that does actually, when you see the traditional dubbing pipeline, they rewrite the script in a way to do that. And I remember seeing one of my own films the first time, but like how it had been rewritten. And I think we give so much care to the scenes, the characters, the writing. It's so nuanced in terms of kind of what you're trying to expose or convey and all these elements. And then that gets rewritten in 40 different ways across the world with someone else's interpretation to try and fit the mouth movements, which are incorrect. And I think the process basically flips that on its head and it says, don't do that. Write the correct script and perform it the correct way, and then fit the mouth movements to that. And I think that's kind of like, it's fixing the problem rather than creating problems to work around a situation.
Victor Nava, what moment surprised you the most during this? Was there a moment where you realized you were won over? Like, I want to know, like, at what point did you like fully embrace this? What excited you?
I don't know if that's the answer to your question, but when we met Scott and the Flawless team, I was pretty sure that we will not change anything in the movie. Yeah, the movie is what a movie is. But then it came, the first, what if we do, like, maybe we can change that, or maybe we can make things a little bit better. first I was like, yeah, no, no, this is okay. I'm going to be polite.
You, by the way, you were exceptionally polite.
Thank you. But then Scott had this wonderful ideas. I mean, he's have seen the movie with fresh eyes, and I mean, he's a director himself, and he had this brilliant ideas, which was like ideas we had back when we were doing the movie. But yeah, you'd make creative choices. So with his ideas and with our collaboration, we could like tweak the movie in a way. And we also shot a new beginning for the movie. I mean, the English version is like a director's cut with a new opening that's not in the Swedish version, which I think made the whole movie a lot better.
I think it's the first time with filmmaking where you've had the ability to go back. Well, you know, as you say, typically you're locked and you can't do anything about it, and you have to abandon your work, and there's nothing you can do about it. It's hard, and I think a lot of the compromises that you make in the filmmaking process are usually just down to budget. Like you guys wanted to do an opening similar to what you got in the end, but the constraint of budget and the inability to change anything after the fact really, you know, it's a problem with filmmaking, whereas actually this is the first time where you've been able to open it up and say, oh, actually, we can make those tweaks, we can make those changes, we can make these small adjustments to character arcs that play, and you can, you know, and I think one of the sessions was we had various screenings of the movie, and everyone kind of listened to the feedback, right? And it was like, okay, and the feedback was pretty the same kind of things that had bugged you guys about the movie. Yeah. And then they were able to figure out, oh, actually, because I can now change that dialogue a bit here, or I can do that bit here, you can make these small tweaks, which, you know, which probably add up a lot to the movie, and you get the movie that you guys actually wanted more, right? It's like, it's your, you know, it's like, so it's incredibly exciting in that way, because you're not just stuck with a movie through all the compromises that you make it in the usual way. I think that's the other part of this that's going to change with these technologies hitting the filmmaking pipeline, you know?
So Scott, I guess probably my last question, because I'm running out of time here, but AI is a rightfully scary word for creative people. And I think a lot of people worry it's going to replace creativity rather than allow it to be accentuated. So can you talk about the idea of ethical AI, which is, you know, the words that are frequently used with your company, and how do you approach creatives to say, hey, this is a tool, and how do you build that bridge? What are those conversations like to make sure you are communicating what this is?
Yeah, and I think that's it's spot on as a struggle, because I think all technologies can be used for good or bad, truthfully, right? Like it depends on how it's utilized, how it's used. I think where Flawless has been different from pretty much every tech company out there in this space is we came from creatives as filmmakers like myself with the same problems that you guys have had, that we've had, and have approached it from that angle. So we've built tools for creatives, for artists, for directors, for actors, for sound mixers, this kind of stuff. And I think when you enable the artists, the creatives themselves with new technologies, they can do a lot more with it. And that's the right way around. Like what you should not be doing is replacing creatives with AI. It doesn't even replace, to be honest, either. It's like at the very best you're going to get is a simulation of something that's kind of copied and derived, and it's kind of sludge. So I actually think as you kind of go forward into this kind of new world and these new technologies, you'll find that the best stuff is going to be made by the best filmmakers using the best tools, not by some giant monolithic algorithm that's going to spit out a copy of all our movies that it's swallowed and present and look something like a movie. I just don't think that's going to work. So I think that we're entering an era with these technologies when it's done right and done ethically, and you've really brought all the parties into it and said to the actors, how do you want this used? And you've said to the directors, how do you want this used? The writers, when you actually go through that process, you realize that everyone does want to use new tools that are ethical and right. And what's going to happen, I think, is we're going to see better movies from it. You know, we're going to see not just world cinema movies coming in across different territories and like a global cinema community, but I also think the iterations that we talk about, right, are going to make movies better. So I think these technologies are going to, you know, going to fundamentally change and grow the industry, as long as you, at the same time as you develop the technologies, you protect the rights of creatives at the same time. And if you do those things in parallel, I think it's a very, you know, it's a great future. And that's what we've been pushing for.
All right. Well, I'm out of time. Thank you so much for your time today. And I hope everyone else gets a chance to enjoy the movie as much as I did. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Jim. Bye.
All right, that's going to do it for today's episode of the show. I'm going to link to Jacob's review of Watch the Skies, formerly known as UFO Sweden, in the show notes. So I encourage you all to click on that and read it and dive into that maybe after you've had a chance to see the movie. Slash Film Daily is typically published every weekday, bringing you the most exciting news from the world of movies and TV, as well as deeper dives into the great features you can find on the site. You can subscribe to the show on Apple, Overcast, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Send your feedback, questions, comments, concerns, and mailbag topics to us at bpearson@slashfilm.com. Make sure to leave your name and general geographic location in case we mention your email on the air. Don't forget to take a minute to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. That really helps us out a lot. Tell your friends about the show any way you can. Thanks so much for listening, and we will talk to you all tomorrow.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.